Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patty LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hello, and welcome to Musicals with Cheese. Today I have an ultra special guest. I have podcaster and composer Joel B. New. Hi, Joel. Thanks for joining me.
Hey, Jess. Thanks for having me. Did you call me super special?
Yeah.
Wow. That is high praise. Thank you.
So we're just going to chat a little bit about you and what you do and how you do it. So my first question, and we're just going to dive right into this. How would you describe yourself? To those who may not know of you, your art, your artistic goals, and all of that.
Yeah. So hi, my name is Joel B. New. I write musicals. I have a long, strong background in musical theater, started out as a performer, and while in school, discovered that I had a knack and a passion for writing musicals versus starring in them. So that is the path that that I took. I would say my brand, you know, is like, that's kind of like a, you know, it's the word, it's like journey. It's like those words that we all think we know what they mean. But my brand, I think, is, you know, I'm very quirky and random and fun, but also incredibly sincere. My music has, I'm trained in pop and jazz. So like my scores tend to live in one or both of those worlds most of the time. I love writing funny stuff that's really dark and dark stuff that's really funny. And that is kind of what I'm about.
Mm-hmm. I specifically love your Cabot Cove album. Like, I listen to that day and night. It's a great, great album.
Thank you very much.
You have a podcast, or had, it has since been, I'm not sure if it's a hiatus or if it's stopped, but you did have a podcast called Something New for a long time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm not sure either, but so Something New, I did it for 5 years, and what it was and is a podcast where I would bring people on and interview them who were musical theater performers, but also did something else. So that didn't have to necessarily relate to the arts, but often cases it did, but I would also I wanted to understand why people had these parallel career tracks and why they didn't necessarily see either as the primary or the other as like the day job or the side hustle, and just how saying yes to these other impulses actually enriches your artistry in a way that just doing the art might not necessarily get you there, or, you know, just why saying yes is so important and leaning into those things. And then, of course, at the end of every episode, I would force them to sing one of my songs. And it really forced me to write a lot, because I did it in seasons. I would do 9 months, one episode every other week. So like 18 episodes a season. So that's 18 songs a season. I did 5 years of it. So it was definitely a great deadline giver, which I'm all about. Otherwise, nothing gets done.
I think that was like one of the most interesting part to me was the brand new song every time there was a podcast. I was like, it made me really interested. All right, what's coming up next? Let's go.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. And sometimes the project, because I never wanted the podcast to be its own thing. I always wanted it to run in tandem with projects that I was working on, whether it was like a full length musical or my Cabot Cove album. So often the whole season was like leading to like a culminating experience where we would like then hear a concert version of the show for the first time. But also I would have guests on, like I had Michael Casera, who's a casting director, on, and I wrote a song called You Just Ain't My Type. And so like I played a lot with people's career choices, and that inspired often what the songs were about. And I would also try to like play to their vocal strengths and like their different vocal styles. Like I had Stanley Martin on, and he was like a big fan of Amy Winehouse, and so I was like, all right, well, what would a Joel B. New Amy Winehouse song sound like? You know, and I got to find out.
Great. You got to stretch and do things that you wouldn't think of doing yourself, which, great creative energy. I love it. I'm feeling it.
Thank you. Exactly. Well, that's what Something New is all about. So if I wasn't walking the walk as well as the host and producer, then, you know, what are we doing?
Now, my next question is, have you always wanted to be a composer, specifically for musical theater? And if so, what made you discover that that was really your true calling?
Yeah, so, I mean, I've been interested in musicals for a very, very long time. Starting when I was about 10 years old, I did a community theater production of Oliver. And yes, as Oliver, of course. So I set the bar very high for myself from the start. And so I did that for, I did musicals and, you know, voice lessons and dance lessons and all that stuff. I was very interested in being this triple threat that I kept hearing about. And I even went to college for it. And I had dabbled in music composition in high school, like a little bit, but mostly like chorus, like choral work. And then when I got to college, which I was still like majoring in performance, it was at Oklahoma City University where I got a Bachelor of Music, where there was just a lot of like music theory classes, like aural training, things of that nature that really sparked my interest in a way that my contemporaries in my class didn't necessarily share that with me in this very specific way. And so when I was about 20, I said, I think I'm going to write a musical. And the right people said, yes, how can we help? And so when I was 21, I finished like the first draft of my first musical. And, you know, it was an ambitious first show. And, but it got me excited enough to want to keep doing it. And so here we are X years later.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I have a question, and it's going to sound, I want it to be a very specific question. So
okay,
who do you think are your musical theater influences? This doesn't mean like your favorite composers and all that. Which ones do you feel have influenced the way that you write the most?
Ooh. All right. Some of these will sound very canned, but I would say like William Finn, for sure.
I hear that so much in your music, so yes.
Thank you. Thank you very much. That means a lot. Ricky Ian Gordon, who's more of an art song and opera composer, but right. His music spoke to me at a very early age and still, you know, affects me very powerfully. Tina Fey, and I do count her in the musical theater writer's canon now that she has Mean Girls on the boards.
Yes.
Tina Fey, for sure. Forbidden Broadway.
Mm-hmm.
Duncan Sheik, for like more of my poppy stuff. I don't know, it's a long list, but that's just kind of, mm-hmm. I mean, that kind of is my wide net, or like the tent poles, I guess.
But none of them are like the ones that you hear from literally every other composer, which is the Stephen Sondheims and the Adam Gettles and all that.
I love Sondheim and I love Adam Gettle. Light in the Piazza is one of my favorite musicals. I think I love it so much because it's something that I could never write. It's so beyond. And I feel like, you know, Sondheim, like that is a very valid answer and I have all the respect in the world, but it's almost like, can we assume that Rodgers and Hammerstein, Sondheim, Schwartz, you know, there's a list of writers that I think we don't have to say any. I mean, you know, it's important that we, you know, don't forget them, obviously. But what I'm saying is like once I think some of those answers are implied in the other names that you might mention that might be a little more specific to your voice, if that makes sense.
That makes complete sense, and you said it very, very well. And so you're also a performer of your own work. Do you find it easier to perform your work or to give it off to performers to do on their own and figure it out themselves?
I think interpretation-wise, it's easier for me. Because just like the Cabot Cove album, for example. So I wrote this 5-song EP of what I call theater pop songs that are loosely inspired by the Murder, She Wrote TV series. And that's a whole other story. But I wrote this specifically with my voice in mind because a friend of mine said, he was like, I enjoy your songs the most when you're singing them. And I was like, huh, okay, well, that would make this a lot easier to produce if I, you know. So, I mean, I write very specifically for my voice, but I also really enjoy listening to how others interpret it and just give them the flexibility and the freedom to do their thing with the songs. Like, that's one of my first rules when I start rehearsal, like for this Monkey Trouble Unleashed musical that I'm in rehearsals for right now. My first thing I say to all my actors is like, well, this is your song now, and you are debuting this song. So whatever's on the page is great, and let's start there. It's like ballet. It's like, this is a good foundation, and now let's make it yours. And if you sing a different word or you sing a different note, I think we should listen to maybe why you chose that word or that note instead of what was there. Because, you know, at the end of the day, it needs to sound organic, and that's the way you want to lean, at least when I have a conversation about it.
Mm-hmm. And it's funny that you should mention Monkey Trouble Unleashed, because I got a few questions about that show.
Oh, look how effortlessly we segged into that.
I know. So you describe it, like, officially on the website as a musical parody mashup of two critically obscure films, Monkey Trouble and Unleashed.
Mm-hmm.
What drove you to those films, and what screamed out as musical?
Like something no one else would do. I'm really interested in that. Maybe that's why, you know, I don't say Sondheim or Jason Robert Brown in, like, my list of composers that I want to emulate, who I do admire greatly. But I think it's just because I think everyone else is saying that. Maybe I bulk up against that. Anyway, so when I was a wee lad, there was a movie called Monkey Trouble. And I really enjoyed it, and it's still one of my favorite movies. It starts a very young Thora Birch and a capuchin monkey, and I loved it. And then 11 years later, when I was in my 20s, this movie came out called Unleashed, and it was written by Luc Besson, who was the guy behind the movie The Fifth Element, which is one of my favorite movies of all time. And so I just kind of, like, kept him on my radar from then on. And so when then Unleashed came out, I was like, okay, I don't know what this is about. We're going to go see it. And when I saw it, I was like, this is the exact same plot as Monkey Trouble from my childhood. And I was like, I don't think anyone else realizes this, or, you know, no one else remembers this other movie. And I was like, God, it's just so crazy how, like, there seems to be, like, this is such a specific story, and yet there's so many similar beats. And I was like, this is so weird. Like, are we running out of stories? And, I kept thinking about that. And that was in 2005. And so I was still in grad school at the time. And I was getting my MFA in musical theater composition at NYU. And from there, I wrote a bunch of different shows, like To Hell and Back, Mackenzie and the Missing Boy, Cabot Cove, Agatha in the Attic, Joel B. News Trying Too Hard. You know, I did a lot of these different projects, including the podcast. And I don't know, it takes a lot to get a new show started, and a lot to feel like you can put another one on the shelf, even for, like, a little bit, you know, because they're all your kids, and you want to pay them as much attention as they need. And so, really long story short, I decided, I just need to write this. You know, like, I had applied to a couple of things with this, like, as a pitch, and no one was biting. And I talked to a director, and they didn't bite. And I finally call this, like, my fuck it show. I was like, you know, fuck. It's like, fuck it. And it's not like I've ever really been concerned with, you know, my commercial viability or anything like that, because I write Murder, She Wrote albums and radio podcast musicals, and, like, I'm doing weird things, but this was like, I was like, this has to be the weirdest thing I've ever written, and it definitely is. I wrote it in about 4 months, which is pretty fast for me. I wrote, like, act one in 2 months, and then I did a table read, and then I did another 2 months and wrote act two, and did table reads of those at the Dramatists Guild Foundation. And then about eight, nine months ago, I contacted the Duplex, and I've done tons of shows with them before. And I said, I need a deadline. Can you give me a venue in 9 months? I was like, 'cause that's, you know, how long it takes to make a baby. And they're like, great, here, you know, how about Sunday, October 6th? And I said, great. And that deadline alone pushed me to create the first incarnation of Monkey Trouble Unleashed. And here we are about 4 weeks out before it has its concert debut.
Now, I'm curious. You're doing this basically as a cabaret performance, right?
Yeah, it's like a concert slash reading. It's concert cabaret reading. So we'll go with that. But like, we're doing all the songs. We're doing the lines. You know, obviously, there's no real. Everything's behind music stands. There's no real staging or anything like that. But we're hoping to. You know, we haven't started scene rehearsals yet. But we're hoping to get away with not having to have someone say, "Danny enters," or you know, we don't want any of those stage directions to kind of like disrupt the flow of what we hope will be a fun, fluid evening.
Mm-hmm. I think it sounds incredible, unlike everything else. I have a question about your artistic process, and I don't think anyone else will get anything that interesting out of it but me, but do you find yourself as an artist, if you're doing the same thing as everything else, you get insanely bored after working on it for about a month?
Well, I don't even think I get that far if I have to write something that I think everyone else is doing. And I have, you know, I have auditioned, I've written spec songs for movie musical adaptations and things like that, and I've never gotten that far because I will always write the song for the character that like has like one line in the movie, and I wrote them this 5-minute song, and you know, and that's the feedback I get. They're like, "Oh, and why are you doing it in this style?" And I'm like, "Oh, because that's what I want to do, because I don't think anyone else is going to do it like that." And I think it serves me well when I'm doing like my knee stuff, and it definitely can hinder me if there's more of a formal assignment and they're looking for something specific. So like I've got my own specificity for better or worse.
And you're going by your own rules of what you think is good, as opposed to like, I'm going to make Pride and Prejudice the musical.
Yeah. I mean, like, I know enough rules and, you know, I know enough about traditional storytelling and music composition and things like pacing and story structure and song placement and all that kind of stuff that, like, I know how to, I know, I give good story. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, what was the question?
I think you answered it somewhere in there. Just going to get to personal preference right here. Just the basic thing the basic bitch question, if you don't mind me, my friend.
Please.
What is your favorite musicals and why?
Ugh. Favorite musicals. I think your favorite musicals are the same. It's like the same answer when you ask, like, who's your favorite SNL actor? And it's always, I feel, the SNL actors that you grew up with. And I think, like, the musicals that formed me from an early age on are, like, Falsettos by William Finn and James Lapine. Like, Falsettos is a masterpiece, and I learned of it at a very early age, and, you know, that shaped me for many reasons. Sunday in the Park with George. Now we're getting into the, you know, the pageant answers, but definitely Sunday in the Park with George. Again, James Lapine, Stephen Sondheim, you know, I think about the finale of that show and I start crying. So we should move on. Well, obviously that one, because like it speaks to me as an artist and speaks to me as a person. And sometimes treading that fine line between living your life for your art and living your life for living's sake is it's a daily battle, I would say. And then, I mean, like, I love Spring Awakening. I mentioned Duncan Sheik earlier. I think that's a beautiful work of art, and the juxtaposition between the period piece and the when they whip out those microphones was very exciting in its day.
Yes.
I mean, Rent, for similar reasons. Like that show, I think it was like the first show that I memorized from start to finish, you know, which I think was the case for most of us.
Mm-hmm. So 90s kids musicals.
But they've become like huge classics. And one of my new favorite musicals is Everybody's Talking About Jamie, which is on the West End. It's such a good show. And it's one of those few that, you know, when you're listening to Spotify and they just like throw, they're like, here's a show tune. Like you're listening to pop music and all of a sudden they throw in a show tune because they know you like musicals and you're gay. And they, you know, they're like, here's a song. And I'm like, this sounds like Mean Girls or something like that. And but when the opening number of Everybody Talking About Jamie came on randomly on a Spotify playlist, I didn't know it was from a musical. I was like, oh, this is delightful. What is this? And when I found out, I was hooked, and I went and saw it in movie theaters, and I made my husband go see it when he was visiting London this summer. So yeah, I'm obsessed. It should come here and run for years.
Now, as a composer yourself and a recipient of the Jonathan Larson Grant for Musical Theater, I'm curious, what would be your advice to people that are growing up and wanting to be a musical theater composer, much like yourself?
My advice for if what I'm doing is what they want to do?
Yes.
I would say do it because dance like nobody's watching. Like write like no one's going to hear it. I mean, but also write like everyone's going to hear it. How's that for thought provoking? You should write stuff that, especially early in your career, I mean, you should always be writing stuff that brings you joy, even if you're getting commissioned to, you know, write, you know, ABC, the movie, the musical. You want to find your way in. And I feel like you have to know what your way in is from the get-go and be prepared for that to change as you mature. And, you know, but always make sure that you're finding your point of view from the start. And I feel like that was something that it's harder to teach that in college, to like, you know, find out like what your brand is or like what your themes are. And I think those are things that you kind of stumble upon as you're making the things, and you're like, oh, I guess there is a through line. But I think the more quickly you can identify the things that you are writing organically that people are connecting with. I mean, get stuff in front of people, make deadlines, put it in front of people. I don't care where, I don't care how. There is no excuse in the 21st century to not get your work out there in some way. You can make a podcast for free. Hello. You can do something in your living room and then stream it on YouTube. You can, you know, call up your local cabaret venue and be like, hey, I need a deadline. Will you help me? You will be surprised how many people want to help you. Because there's so many good stories to be told. And there's, while there are a gazillion musical theater writers now and only so many stages, like the stage, the platforms are expanding exponentially. And we all need to hear your story.
Beautiful. That is wonderful words of advice. Great wisdom from a very great man. Now, Joel, we're wrapping up, but I want you to give everyone a chance to find all your work. So, if there's stuff you want to promote, the best places to find your previous work, just throw it out at us. Let us hear it.
You should go to joelbnew.com. That's where everything is. You can get, you can listen to demos and watch videos from previous concerts of all my musicals. The one that I'm really excited about right now is the premiere of Monkey Trouble Unleashed, which is debuting on Sunday, October 6th at 6:30 p.m. at the Duplex. It's a great, weird little show about a man who thinks he's a monkey, and when you take his collar off, he wants to kill people. But he wants something more, and when he does, he falls in love, and he falls in love with a man, and he has to ask himself, like, what does it mean to be a monkey versus being a man? And to make peace with all the violence of his past, and find out that love is love, and love is always the best catalyst for change. So it's a beautiful, violent show with lots of killing, and but lots of love and lots of silliness. So please go to joelbnew.com/monkey, and you can get all the info, ticket link. I'm on Instagram and all that stuff at joelbnew. I try to do some amusing things over there, so check it out.
Mm-hmm. And all these links you will find in the show notes below. as well, if I want to give my personal preference of my favorite things, I love Cabot Cove. It is on my iPhone shuffle. It comes up. I listen to The Corpse Dance at Midnight a lot, as well as Murder in a Minor Key. Both.
Thank you very much.
Both are frequently played in my little world.
That makes me very happy. Thank you.
And don't forget to check out like all the back catalog of Something New Musical Theater Podcast, which I also think is actively really great. Even though
thank
there's no
you,
new episodes
you.
Coming, it
well,
still
there...
is a good listen.
Well, I should say, I don't know when this is coming out, but I have I have temporarily revived it, and I'm doing 5 episodes that are gearing up towards the premiere of Monkey Trouble Unleashed. So I'm interviewing my cast 1 a week. And so I just released 2 new episodes with 2 of my stars, Amy Jo Jackson and Ernie Prenetta. And then I will continue and interview the rest of my cast, which is currently Lee Ellen Caudill, Charles Sanchez, and Andrew Christie.
Mm-hmm. So go check those out too, but
yeah.
Be sure to come back here every now and then. Don't just leave this podcast forever after you discover something
well,
new.
I'm a fan for life now. So musicals with cheese. You haven't lost. You will not lose me. You are my something new.
Yeah. All right, guys. Thank you for coming on, Joel. Anytime you want to come on or talk about musicals with us, feel free to come on.
Sounds like a dream. Thank you so much for having me.
All right, we'll see you guys next time on Musicals with Cheese.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com, and of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.